Flashback Twin Cities. Tom Osmond here on KLBV Club 1220 for the next hour, along with our master of controls, Tom Hsu.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Good. How was your special assignment last week?
Oh, special assignment was wonderful.
You were doing water and soil testing up at the Boundary Waters, right?
Yeah. That's what it was.
Yeah.
I totally didn't just go fishing and get, you know, a little tipsy all weekend.
Wait a second. Tipsy? You mean you had the spirits out?
I was in a canoe, tipping. Yeah.
Tipping, exactly. tipping the server at the Dock Cafe, right?
Not well.
Now, it is 1 o'clock right now, and just in case our vast audience is wondering, it is 1 o'clock now. Flashback Twin Cities, 1 o'clock.
That's
Saturday
right.
Saturday afternoons.
We've moved back to the original time.
We had a short stint at 2 o'clock, but we're back at 1 o'clock, and Sounds of Sinatra on at 2 o'clock.
Is it two? It might be three now.
It'll be three now?
Okay. I believe it's 3 o'clock.
I will leave the programming to you then, sir.
Yeah, 3 o'clock.
3 o'clock, okay.
So all those folks looking for that, don't worry. It'll come on shortly.
Great. Well, we have a great guest today. We've had him on before, and I'm very happy he's able to talk to us from a remote location. Bernie, are you on with us?
I am on with you. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Bernie. And where are we calling you at today? What, are you in Minnesota?
I am.
Are you at the... I'm sorry?
I'm near South Haven, Minnesota, and we may cut in and out because cell phone service isn't the best.
Well, you know what? We'll do what we can here. It's good to hear from you. Bernie, I recently – we had you on the show last year. We talked a lot about Poland, and there's been a lot of going on again in Russia with some of the world turmoil, and I think there's been a lot of interest again in past conflicts and past events. I posted some video that were generous enough to provide me on Poland when you were actually in Poland, and it has received a lot of interest, a lot of hits. I'd like to, and I'll talk a little bit more about other things you've done, but I want to kind of just start with this because it is the anniversary of June 2nd, 1979, when Pope John Paul actually went to Poland, which many saw was kind of a turning point in communism in Poland. You went to Poland in 1981, correct?
Right, yeah.
And the assignment was just to go and talk to people from in Poland and really just get an idea of what life was like, correct?
Well, yes, things were really falling apart quickly in Poland. The food lines were long, and they weren't getting fuel, and the fuel lines were long and everything else. And, of course, we have a large Polish population in the Twin Cities. So we met with some of the relatives here and went to track down their relatives over there just to see how they were doing. And that was kind of the premise of the story.
Was communication challenging at that point for people that lived here in Minnesota to Poland? I know that, especially think of East Germany or other countries, there was virtually no communication with the outside world. Was communication virtually non-existent for Polish people in that time?
Well, actually, you could get through by phone at times. And in fact, we'd run into some people that had made Poland their retirement community. They were from South St. Paul, and they went over there. And, their Social Security check went so much further in Poland. And they had a house there and everything else, and they stayed in touch with their relatives back in South St. Paul. So it was phone service, but it was sporadic at time. Most of them, of course, couldn't afford the phone service, from Poland back, so they just wrote letters.
And at that point, so you worked for, again, Bernie Grace, former reporter for Care TV, and at the time was WTCM when you first went to Poland. I do have a question. This seems like a pretty extravagant trip for, at the time, WTCN was not a hugely profitable station. How did you swing a trip to Poland at that point?
Well, of course, they had just gone in 79 from the independent TCN. And they were establishing a news department, and so they were out there, and they were taking gambles, and they were, doing good, thoughtful pieces, and actually this turned into like a 15-part series, and then an hour special, because, we became the story when I was locked up in prison and got out. So the station at the time was establishing itself as a news entity, and only history will tell, but, once it was taken over by Gannett in 83, and more money was spent on news, and nobody was kind of looking at Channel 11. And then about 85, 86, they started to move, and it became number one, I think, in 87.
And you were there for the whole time?
Yes.
Let's talk a little about that trip to Poland. So you got assigned to Poland, and had you ever been? Had you been out to Europe before?
Yeah, as a tourist, but never the East Bloc countries. No.
And you get to Poland, and how many days were you there? Just during the story before the actual, before you were taken into custody.
The day we got there, it was really weird because they were having riots and things were really a mess. And of course, Solidarity, the labor union was making its move, and the communists were trying to quell that. And so the day we got there, they seized our equipment and everything. Very first day, right at the airport, took everything. And it's like, well, this is going to be real life series. Here we are in Poland and have no equipment to shoot with. And so this went on for 2 or 3 days. We would go to the airport. They wouldn't release anything. And, we started talking around. And, it was such a corrupt system at the time. They said, it's nothing that a bottle of cognac and some Marlboro cigarettes can't buy off. So, of course, we went out, bought them, and paid their, bribe. And we had our equipment. So then we started doing the series. And we were there for 2 weeks. Went all across the country, north, south, west, and, met with all these relatives, did individual parts, people involved in farm life, city life, whatever. And then when we finished, it was like we were on the Russian border, and the day we were on the Russian border was the day that there was a crackdown, a martial law crackdown, because that day, Solidarity had voted to establish a party of its own, and it was basically wanted a democracy, and it was a communist country at the time. And so we knew it was going to be trouble, and they declared martial law and everything else. So we got back on the way back into Warsaw. We didn't realize how bad it was, and we were hiding behind trees and taking pictures of tons of troops, movements and everything else. Had some spectacular video. When we got to the NBC bureau in Warsaw, don't you go out. Don't do anything. We said, well, we have about an hour of tape, and we could do no wrong after that. They took our tape, and they used it for stories and stuff. And then we were kind of locked up for almost another week before they would release any flights out or trains out or anything like that. So I was over there for a good little over 3 weeks before we even tried to get out of the country.
So you were there actually in custody for a week.
Well, actually, what happened is we were there for a week doing our stories. We're editing and everything else. We figured one tape is better than 60 raw tapes. And so we, in the hotel, day and night, we were editing these stories, and we put them on a master tape, and we had about 5 master tapes. And we decided, the photographer and myself, that we should break up. He'll go one way, I'll go another, and we'll have an opportunity to get him out. Because back then, you didn't do satellite or anything.
Right.
You had to sneak your tape out by train or whatever. And I hopped on a train finally with one of the masters in my suitcase, and everything's going fine until we got to the border. And, I had written a story. And I decided to, maybe that wasn't good, so I ripped it up and tossed it in the trash barrel of the train, and I didn't know I was sitting, but in any event, I got back to my seat, and when we're at the border of East Germany, that's when the troops came on with their machine and ordered me off, and I, obliged and gave them all my raw tapes, but I didn't tell them I had a completed tape in my suitcase, and they checked it, and I thought all was well. Then somebody came in with another machine gun and walks into the room, and he must have been watching this whole thing, and I thought, oh, boy. And that's when he ripped the suitcase apart and found the master tape that I had, and everything went downhill very quickly from that point.
And you were a young guy. At this point, was this one of the scariest you've ever been in your life at that point?
Oh, yes. Yeah. But you're just going through, what's going on, and at that point, it happened to be in December, snowing, and you couldn't have written a script any better. And of course, it's easy to talk about now, but as you're going through it, it's rather scary. And they throw you in the paddy wagon with a bunch of armed men, and they take you to this prison. I thought, well, maybe I can meet some Americans there, and we can talk about what's going on. So this the story continues. But I was put in solitary confinement, and, they were serious. Take the shoelaces, the ties, everything else, and and there I was. But the good news, before we saw, during the week's time we were there editing, They said all journalists should re-register the martial law government, and that was smart because they eventually tracked it back, found out I wasn't a spy. I just happened to be a legitimate reporter, and so within a day things were cleared up and I was released. But when I went in there, they said I'd be there for 5 years for being a spy.
Oh, jeez.
Were you there on a tourist visa? Or were you there on a?
No, I was there on a regular news visa.
Okay,
so they knew I was person.
Was the 5 year thing? Yeah. Was that just a threat, a scare tactic, or were they serious?
No, oh no, they had a form there and everything else, and wrote 5 years and presented it to me before I went into the solitary confinement, and and so I knew they meant business. And when they locked the door, and it's just a small hole in your. On the floor, it's like, you really hit the jackpot now.
So, in contemporary, this is as bad as going into Iran or North Korea at this point in time.
Yeah. But, the difference is they have a real value of life in Poland. And the people that were doing it, in history would bear this out, because there was some confusion at the time whether the Russians had invaded, kind of like they're doing, suspected of doing in Ukraine. Had they been invaded and just kind of, worn Polish uniforms and stuff and, were stirring up trouble and might they, cause a lot of violence. But the history bore it out that it was the Poles themselves, Jaruzelski, the president, who declared, that we have got to get things under control or else the Russians will come in. And so, that was the difference. And there's a value on life in Poland where in some countries there's not.
And the question I always wonder is the people that are – so you have the people that have machine guns as soldiers, are they was that something that they had to do, or did you really think that they were really in support of the government? And the argument can be made, was the armies in Germany that were fighting for Germany, were they really truly part of this, the Nazi regime, or were they just doing it because that's a job? And that's what I often wonder when...
Well, I think, in my case, I think they meant what they were doing because they were, trying to find out what I was doing and everything else. And before it was over with there, before I went into prison, I was strip searched. They were sure I had more tapes on my body and, the old machine gun in the back and... pretty harrowing experience, but I think they really didn't think I was a spy. I alluded earlier to the fact that I had written a story. Well, would you believe when they were questioning me, they pulled that story out that I tossed in the trash barrel and was all pasted back together again? And, of course, I, said, oh, yeah, it was a story, blah, blah, blah. But, so they were playing for keeps.
That's incredible.
Were you being followed then for days?
Well, we always suspected we were, and I had to laugh because just yesterday I heard how Hillary Clinton would, in her memoirs, would be in a hotel room and put a blanket over her head to read, cables and things she needed to read. So, when you're in hostile territory, there's always the fear there are hidden cameras in the rooms and mics. And we always, when I was with my photographer there before he split up, and by the way, I went by train, and he ended up getting out a week later, and he went by plane, and he got all the tapes out, so, hey, our plan worked, and we got all the stories on. Leave it to the photographer to be the credible one, and the reporter to be the incredible one, but we would have the radio blasting loud, so, and we'd whisper. You have to safeguard because they could be spying on you very easily.
I have a little audio, actually, of your photographer, Dave. Pronounce his name for me, Bernie. Dave.
Unzicker.
This is from December 1981. This is Dave talking. He's actually at the NBC Bureau in New York talking to Dennis Bounds on his arrival back in the USA.
How have you been the last 4 days?
Well, Dennis, I've been in Warsaw. Came into the NBC office in Warsaw this morning at the Victoria Hotel, and they told me that there was going to be a charter flight out. And so what I did is I went to the LOT office, which is the airlines office, and I got a ticket, and I got out of Warsaw, basically. It was a 9-hour flight, and I'm safe here in New York.
Dave, how long did you have to wait at the airport for your flight to leave?
Well, there were a lot of... first of all, there's a lot of confusion going on there. They... we waited for... Our plane started an hour late. And then when we got on the plane, they said that there was no airspace for 2 hours. But if the airport was closed, I couldn't figure out why there wouldn't be any airspace, except there were planes taking off and planes landing all around us. Mm-hmm. I don't know who was on those planes or who was coming in or going out, but
we had about... And this is on tcmedianow.com if anyone wants to watch the full footage of this. This is Dave, a very tired Dave. You can tell he had kind of a rough few weeks, and he's back in New York, probably feeling very safe to be back in the good old U.S. of A. He speaks a little bit about you and him getting separated, Bernie, and his trip back to America.
Yeah, and God bless Dave. He died of cancer in the early 2000s, and a great photographer. It was so funny because, you know, it's so unscripted what we were doing. And, you know, you're just trying to get tapes out and get the story back and everything else. And the way he got the tapes out is... He was lucky enough to go through a customs person who had a solidarity pin, and they wanted the word to get out underneath her collar. She wore the word, and she just waved them through with all the tapes. And, I mean, that was just a stroke of luck for both of us. And so he had everything, and, you know, the plan worked. But what a great photographer.
Did you think, Bernie Grace, our guest today from Care 11, did you think that when you were there that within a 10-year period that the country would have changed the way it did?
No, because they put the clamps on so strongly, and you know, and then it was about 1989, 6 years later, you know, Lech Walesa was to become their president, and was we just took a gamble. We went back in '89 before he became president, and we went up to Gdansk, and darn if we didn't get in there within an hour and got an exclusive interview with him. And then we went back to Warsaw, and Vice President Mondale was there, and they had called him over to, you know, basically assist, counsel, whatever, to, you know, how do you get a democracy up and running from a communist country? And, you know, we had an interview with him, and, of course, the Vice President, he's just a great guy, you know, stood there and gave us great insight. And, you know, what do you do to get a government going? And it's not easy.
No, and they did. I actually went to Poland in 2009, and I had low expectations in knowing my history of Poland. I thought I was going to go to a Soviet bloc country that had really nothing. But I was surprised of the beauty of the, you know, the artwork that was still there, you know, how clean it was there. And then, you know, the nice thing for me was, you know, especially in Czech and, you know, Prague and in Poland, is that because everything is so fresh and new now, because they've actually been able to, you know, there's been some money into the countries now, they've been able to invest in infrastructure and you know, beautifying the country. It's really a very wonderful place. I recommend people, if they're in Poland, to go, or in Europe, to check out Poland.
It doesn't have that kind of burnt brown type of look?
Not at all.
Beautiful. Wonderful.
No, and, you know, you can see in some of the cities, sort of like communist style, you know, stuff in the 50s and 60s, these huge gray apartment buildings, but that's not the only thing. You see a lot of beautiful countryside and a lot of beautiful towns that, you know, were spared that communist architect.
And considering you went back in 89, was it a much different experience going back in 89 than it was in 81? I'm sure you were taking every precaution necessary the second time around, knowing that you had a turmoilous experience the first time around.
Yes, but things were moving fast, and, you know, they had an election, and so, you know, it was, everything was different. And the president, Jaruzelski, you know, he was almost about to be found as a war criminal, but they spared him because a lot of people saw he was doing what he had to do at the time. Now, there's a lot of people dispute this, and it's controversial, but he, you know, was trying to play both sides of the middle and keep peace in his country and not have, have the Russians come in. And, you know, it was a tipping point. It was kind of like some of the stuff that happened in some of the other East Bloc countries. So, you know, it could have gotten totally out of hand, and so... Some people say he played the middle to, you know, try to quell solidarity, and eventually, of course, they rose up anyhow.
Bernie Grace, our guest today. Bernie, can you stick around for one more segment? We're just going to take a quick break and come back in
a
few minutes.
Sounds
okay.
Good.
We'll be right back here in Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB.
А дитяки до школи не. І моя хвороба 2 тижні нема буду. Я 3 дні стала мені
недоступна. There's a shortage of patients, as well as meat and milk, bread and butter, and nearly everything else in Poland. The lines grow longer and tempers flare. There have been reports of people being killed in the lines that wind around buildings and are hours long.
The situation is rather bad. It's much more worse than during the war.
The shortages are so bad, nearly everything is rationed. Poles like their cigarettes. Now Poles are limited to a carton a month. Soap is rationed, one bar per person every 2 months. Poles who love their vodka are limited to a pint a month. Detergent, one box a month. Rice, a pound a month. Only a quarter pound of butter a month. And meat in short supply is rationed, 6 pounds a month. But often Poles are lucky to find only a couple of pounds a month. And shoes also in short supply, one pair a year. But again, now it's nearly impossible to find a pair of shoes. So many times, the shelves are empty. So rationing coupons or not, there's a good chance you'll go home with nothing.
Wars, uprisings, and now the disastrous economic conditions have resulted in many Poles leaving their homeland. Polish people are scattered nearly everywhere in the world. But what about the Poles who have stayed? Tonight at 10 o'clock, we'll take a look at what's being done in the Polish-American communities of Minnesota to help the people here. In Warsaw, Poland, Bernie Grace, News Center 11.
There you go.
Yes, that brings back old times.
Long lines and a lot of misery there, Barney.
There was, and, this is kind of what the Russians, I believe, were threatening to do with Ukraine. You know, they were going to cut off their gas supplies and stuff like this. And, well, there was no threat then. I mean, a lot of products came from Russia back then to Poland. And, they didn't like what was going on there. They didn't want a democracy. So, you know, let's make life miserable for everybody. And that's what they did, and they were successful at it. But eventually, democracy won out.
You know, we talk a lot about this show frequently about the change of technology. And at this point, there's very little ways, you know, beyond the phone communication, how people can speak to one another versus a letter or the phone.
Right.
I look at, like, Cuba or other countries right now that have some of these similar challenges. Are these countries going to – are the people going to want what the Western world has, or are they going to want a hybrid between their what their country has and the Western world, and change their leadership, change how their way of living is?
Well, you mentioned Cuba, and I was in Cuba doing a series of stories, too, one time, and I'm just amazed. Now, that was a place I thought, being 90 miles from the U.S., and they can pick up Miami TV stations – I thought for sure that country would have exploded by now, and it hasn't. And I can't imagine why not. I mean, however, they, have a pretty strong tourist industry, and Canadians and everyone else are showing up on the shores to be tourists, and that's bringing some outside money in. But, I just really thought that, they were so curious when I was there about, life in America and everything else, that I thought for sure that place would have caved in by now.
Well, I think that with Raul Castro in charge, I think that he's type of playing the middle. I think he's giving in enough that there's not uprisings. But
Again,
if most people there are fed and they're educated and they have medical care, They may not be upset. We're not seeing the lines in Cuba. But then again, I always take from those kinds of countries any kind of report they provide with a very high degree of skepticism, because you're not working with a neutral eyes when providing that report.
Yeah. So yep, it's amazing, and of course they've kind of swung toward Venezuela to get their economy pumped up, where Russia, is not taking care of them like they ever did, way back in the 60s and 70s.
So, Bernie, in 26 years reporting at CARE 11, was this the kind of the hallmark of your career, do you think? I watched a lot of video when I was transferring for you. A lot of snow, a lot of blizzards, a lot of crime, but I think this Poland experience has to have been, this could be a whole book.
Yeah, the Poland experience definitely was quite the story. I mean, it started out as a challenge and just got tougher and tougher. And but in the end, we prevailed because we got the stories back to the U.S. And it was definitely a highlight.
There's no 60 tapes that are in any warehouse we're going to discover at some point. You had all the tapes were accounted for.
No, they all were turned over to the authorities in Poland, and I'm sure they're long gone by now, but at least we got the master tape out, and that was good.
Well, thank for that. And by the way, both your 1989 piece and the 1981 pieces are available on tcmedianow.com. If people listening want to learn more of this, including the photographer Dave Unziker's trip back to Minnesota, he has an on-set interview that is also on tcmedianow.com. A couple other items I found in the collection was you on the Today Show. You got to do a little bit of a talk show circuit. You came back. You were...
Oh, yeah, we became the story, of course, after getting out of prison. And the funny thing was that, you know, every train that ever came out of Poland, we were the, you know, I don't know, second or third train to come out. But word had already leaked back to the U.S. that this reporter from Minneapolis had been taken off at gunpoint at the train. So they knew I was in custody. So when I finally did get to West Berlin, I was just kind of in shock because I hadn't slept for days. And NBC just grabbed me, but all the networks are there, you know, from around the world. And NBC said, "You work for NBC? We've got a limo." And they threw me in the limo, and we went to this hotel. And first thing in the morning, you're going to be on live with Tom Brokaw on the Today Show. And, you know, they just kind of took care of everything from that point on. It's like, wow.
Were you married at the time?
No, I wasn't. No,
okay,
I got married a couple years later, but... yeah, it was a harrowing experience, but you know, as you're going through it, it's like, oh man, what could happen next? But after it's said and done, you look back and you say, well, it's part of reporting. I mean, reporters all around the world are really, I mean, they go through a lot more than I did, and of course, a lot of them have given their lives trying to tell the true story.
That is very true, and it had to have made travel, at least for you, after that very easy, because if you can make it through Poland. You can make it through any TAS line, right? Or TSA
oh, yeah.
line.
Yeah, you can, and you try to figure out how to make the best of a bad situation all the time.
So, Bernie, are you enjoying retirement, or do you miss the beat sometimes?
Well, once in a while, but no, I'm enjoying retirement and everything else. And news has changed so much from, you know, the 80s and the 90s. I mean, you know, even in the Twin Cities, they traveled the world. They did stories all over the place, and they don't spend that money, you know, traveling the world now because they can pick it up from the networks and things like that. So, you know, the whole industry has changed dramatically, you know, and satellites changed it.
I've had a lot of your colleagues on the show, and one thing from Channel 11, and one thing that they all agree on is when Gannett purchased Channel 11, you were really, you know, benefited by them pumping a lot of money into the station and being able to do a lot of assignments without a lot of red tape. They put you into a plane and a camera, and you were on your way.
Oh, yeah. Well, Channel 4 and 5 were the juggernauts of television news, not only in the Twin Cities, but in the country. And so how does Channel 11 find a piece of the market? And we had some, you know, experts in how to carve out a niche. And first they laughed at us, you know, we had our Domino's Pizza jackets, they'd call them, you know, red, white, and blue, and, you know.
Do you have yours still, by the way? I've been looking at Goodwills for those for years. Do you have one still?
Yeah. You know, I had it somewhere, but I don't even know where it is anymore. But, no, it was fascinating to go through that time, and, you know, they put together a good product. It was a combination of good told stories, soft and hard, and they did a lot of traveling, investigated, and man, we just slid up the side, and the laughs quieted down eventually.
When you came to Minneapolis, did you expect that this was going to be a long two-decade trip, or do you think this is going to be a few years and you're going to be in New York or Chicago?
No, I came to Twin Cities and loved it, and you know, get married and kids, and what a great place to bring up kids. And, you know, I had grown up on the East Coast, and I just had no desire to move a family to New York City, Cleveland, Pittsburgh. Nothing against those cities. It was just way too big, and this was just the right size.
No, and really some great stories, and some of the other stories which you can see of Bernie online, the Marjorie Caldwell story, another you know, very infamous Twin Cities story. You know, a lot of issues with blizzards and everything else we're used to here in Minnesota.
Well, so I was kind of surprised this week when I turned on the news and Billy Glaze, an interview I did in the 80s with Billy Glaze, and, you know, all of a sudden he's, you know, may get a new trial. And he'll never be nominated for Husband of the Year, but he certainly never deserved to go to prison for life if he didn't commit three, you know, murders that they said and, you know, jury convicted of him.
No, it's, you know, again, it's amazing, especially if you look at these stories that are reported on a way, you know, even way, you know, trials were conducted 30 years ago, and now with, you know, with scientific evidence that it's still coming, these cold cases that are being opened up, and again, cases that we thought were long settled, you know, through juries, science can sure change, you know, change the face of these lives and these trials.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, they didn't have that technology back then, and he was a good suspect. I mean, he'd been convicted of rape before, and he told me in an interview he would get drunk, and he figured it was 20 women over the course of time that he had beat up and everything, and but he didn't think he killed any of them. In fact, he said, no, I couldn't have killed them. But, I mean, you know, stuff like that certainly didn't help his cause at all.
No, you know, keeping a story and being decisive might help you in a trial like that. But you know, if he's not truly not guilty of that, and science proves that, then you know he deserves his, you know, second day in court.
Definitely.
You know, the part of democracy and our world is even people that are not very nice and maybe don't deserve even our admiration, they still deserve a fair day in court.
Oh, definitely, and it's, you know, and I understand that the Hennepin County has taken this new technology and they've gone through all their cases and seen did they make mistakes in the other cases, and apparently they haven't turned up the mistakes, but this one here, it sounds like they may have made a mistake.
Well, you know, reading about these more and more on, you know, these cases that, again, in some of these cases weren't just small, they were pretty famous big cases that lasted a while, and time will tell. And more, I always figure the better every day that goes on, medical technology and scientific technology is better. And if that makes it more accurate for people that are in the justice system, all the better. You know, Bernie, when you retired in 2006, you were at the cusp of, social media really hadn't become a thing yet, but you were on email, digital technology was coming there. Were you there for part of the big change in how TV news is being reported on? Right now, everything is through social media and through, you know, small videos on YouTube and on the website. But you were blogging, you were doing emails.
Yes, and feeding the beast, as they would say. But Facebook wasn't that strong yet, so we weren't doing that. But now they have to feed Facebook. Feeding the web, the Channel 11 website, and that was kind of as far as I got into it. But it was, you know, one more step, and now there's all kinds to be fed besides the story that you're doing.
Well, you know, Bernie, I appreciate you coming on today. Again, we'll be in touch. And again, Bernie Grace's work can be seen on tcmedianow.com and occasionally on Channel 11 because his long library of work will be showing up still as things progress here.
Thank you very much for having me.
We'll be in touch, sir. And let's take a break, Tom. We'll come back after this on Flashback Twin Cities here on KLBB. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond, and keeping our topic of Poland, on June 2nd, 1979, which was 35 years ago this week, Pope John Paul II made his first trip back to Poland. And, you know, Pope John Paul was the first non-Italian pope in, I think, like 300 years when he became pope. And for him to come back to communist-run Poland was a big event. And it was the first time a pope had visited a communist country. So this was the lead story on WCCO TV News on June 2nd, 1979. I'm going to play this. We have a very young Don Shelby anchoring. So we'll even get the whole theme in there because it's just that good. And we've got our friend Bud Kraling doing the voiceover. So let's go ahead and take a little flashback here to June 2nd, 1979.
WCCO Television, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
It's coming.
WCCO Television, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
From WCCO Television, the Northwest's leading news station, this is the 10 p.m. report.
Good evening, everyone. In the news tonight, 7 people were taken to a hospital today, the result of an accident on Highway 35W. A simulated storage tank explosion helped St. Paul firemen practice for the real thing. And the other half of the weekend anchor team plays tennis for the American Cancer Society. But topping the news tonight, Pope John Paul II returned to his native Poland today, the first visit by a pope to a communist-ruled country. A report now from CBS News in Warsaw.
The pope kissed the soil of his native land. He announced that he had returned to Poland as a pilgrim, but before the day was out, it was apparent that he had returned as a crusader. It was a cool, official reception. Most members of the Polish Communist Party Presidium had strong objections to the Pope's visit, but realized there was little they could do to prevent it. The Polish people had no reservations. There was joy unrestrained as the Pope rode in what could only be described as triumph through the streets of the capital. The population of the city was perhaps doubled as Poles flocked here for a glimpse of their Pope, their Polish Pope. He said later that the ride through the streets had left him deeply moved as he thought of the tragedy of Warsaw, a city reduced to rubble by the Germans in World War II. At the restored Gothic Cathedral, a building in which tanks fought battles in the war, the crowd outside shouted its affection. The mood was again restrained when the Pope visited the 18th century Belvedere Palace for a formal meeting with Communist Party leader Edward Gierek. But it was at Victory Square, in the center of Warsaw, that the Pope revealed the real nature of his mission to Poland. Perhaps 500,000 faithful, no one knows precisely how many, had waited for hours in wilting heat. No visitor could have had a more receptive audience. The sermon was a bold challenge to a government that promotes atheism and discriminates against the church. Christ, he told the expectant crowd, cannot be excluded from the history of the human race in any time or in any place. That was enough to set off the crowd, and waves of applause rolled across the square. The Pope listened to the deeply emotional response of the huge crowd, himself deeply moved.
What must seem like a jinx to commercial airlines.
There you go. And some follow-up context. This is from BBC, and this is from June 2nd, 1979, BBC. The Pope has returned home to Poland as the first Roman Catholic pontiff to visit a communist-ruled country. As John Paul II set foot on his native soil at Okocie Military Airport, he fell on his knees and kissed the ground. He was greeted by the Polish head of state, Henry Jablonski, and Polish primate Cardinal Stefan Wyszyński. The Pope was then driven off in Warsaw in an open-top car past around 2 million people who cheered, "Long live our Pope." No Pope-mobile. I saw the video. No Pope-mobile. He was greeted by a further 250,000 people as he entered the Victory Square for an open mass, as you can see on tcmedianow.com. Many wept as the Pope walked up to the altar and stood with an open arms for a 30-foot cross, which was draped in red stoles. In exchange of speeches with Mr. Jablonski, he said his visit was dictated by strictly religious motives. Pope stressed he hoped the trip would be the internal unity of my fellow countrymen and also a further favorable development of relations between the state and the church in my beloved motherland. I have kissed the ground of Poland on which I grew up, the land from which I thought the instructable design of Providence, God called me to the chair of Peter in Rome, the land from which I am coming today as a pilgrim, he added. During the 15-minute speech, he also talked about the sufferings of Poland during the World War II. We have every respect for and we are grateful for every bit of help that we have received from others at this time, while we think with sadness of the disappointments that we were not spared. In the departure from his prepared text, the Pope also referred to a banner he had seen held up by a group of visiting Czechoslovakian Catholics, which read, "Remember, Father, your Czech children," which at the time was also a communist country. He said it was good that he had seen the banner and he would not forget them. His return marks the start of an official 9-day visit, which is widely expected to have a major impact on church-state relations in Eastern Europe. During his trip, he will visit Czechocha in southern Poland, site of the Jasna Góra Sanctuary and home of the famous Black Madonna Byzantine icon. I need a Polish person here to do translation for me.
Byzantine.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You and Barry Zavan can do my pronunciation.
Oh, Barry's good at that. Much better.
In context, this is from BBC. In context, the Pope's visit was seen as inspirational to many Catholics in Poland who felt they were no longer alone. Many were deeply opposed to the country's communist government. The Pope, who secretly began religious studies in 1942 during the Nazi occupation of Poland, was often regarded as playing an extremely important role in bringing down communism in Eastern Europe. He traveled to his native Poland again in 2002. The visit was widely viewed as a farewell to the Catholic community closest to his heart. heart. And of course, the Pope died on Saturday, the 2nd of April 2005, after he failed to recover from a throat operation. Pope John Paul, stopping communism.
Stopped it in his tracks.
Stopped in his tracks. And have you been to Poland, Tom?
I haven't been to Poland, but I have been to when Bernie was talking about, you know, the buildings and the architecture. I've been to Qingdao, China, mm-hmm. you know, very communist country as well. And yeah, walking through the towns there, I mean, it has very nice sections of it that have been rebuilt, but a lot of it going through there is that brown, very mm-hmm. block kind of architecture. Just garbage in piles along, like, the side of the streets. Or I saw one apartment building, maybe about three floors up, the balcony, absolutely full of garbage. And it was just, you know, people on the side of the streets playing card game, playing poker and mm-hmm. things like that. Really, we thought we went back in time
to
the 50s or the early 60s in these countries.
You know, the piece in Poland that a lot of people go to is Auschwitz. And not to take this into this, you know, to a darker part of the show here, but when you go to Auschwitz, and I was there, it's, first of all, it's just a soul-chilling experience. But you look at the concentration camp there, and there's like a neighborhood next to it. And I think
just
myself,
like a suburban,
I would call it more of a country. More of a country, you know. There's
sure.
It's a bit on the country, and it's not just in Warsaw. You got to go out a ways, and we went there. The group I was with, and I'm walking into Auschwitz, and the point I'm trying to say is, you look at all like people's backyards, and every day you're looking in your backyard and you see this concentration camp there. It's very. And these houses were probably built either, you know, before or during that period that this was put up, that this, you know, very, very dark, horrible part of history is now coexisting with people's...
Within view.
Within view. Very,
see,
you know,
that's
very
what
close view.
That surprises me. If it was going to be within view, I would think they'd want to make, like, a ring of trees or something
where it
just is cut off from everything else.
Right. And the other thing, and this is, again, not this is not a light, but this is just kind of talk about... You know, what do you expect when you go there? There's like a vending machine. There's like people selling souvenirs outside Auschwitz. It's true. I mean, they sell video, you know, World War II videos and sell things.
Well, you want to remember your trip. I mean, as if you could forget it.
It was one part of my trip I didn't take pictures of, and I took pictures in Dachau when I went there, but I didn't take pictures in Auschwitz. It was not something that I could. I didn't. If I want to remember that, I didn't want to take it back with me with, you know, with pictures. But. Again, thank you to Bernie Grace today. Some very, very interesting pieces of history, and a lot of Twin Cities, again, Twin Cityans have Polish ancestors and probably lost contact during the war. In Chicago, I remember worked with a lot of people that were, you know, first, second generation Poland that I knew in Chicago. And you don't see too much here in the Twin Cities. I think we have an older Polish community here that are probably, you know, well-versed in English, but it was not uncommon to have, you know, bilingual Poles in Chicago when I was there.
Sure. I know just a few here, but I mean, like you said, usually the ones that I know of at least are a little older in age. Jenna, who is our systems operations manager here, her fiance is Polish, and that's about all I got.
let's lighten up the mood, shall we, before we close out here?
Real quick, I just got one question. What do you think about that bribery situation? Like he goes down, Bernie goes down and pays... some cognac and some cigars.
Well, you know, the question I forgot to ask Bernie was, when you went there, you would think that you would be prepped by, if there's NBC people there, you know, national news organization people there in a bureau, that they would tell you got to have plenty of cigarettes or booze on you to do that. You've been to Mexico.
Oh, yes, I've
been to Mexico.
It's just the standard.
It's part of what they tell
you. It's expected.
They tell you to have cash on you because you're going to find your way. The laws there are slippery. The due process is not quite what it is here in our...
A light out on your car. Clink.
Right. Chief Wiggum is running it down there. It's... I believe it, and I think that it's probably... You know, I don't think it goes on in our country too much. I think we're a little bit less, less tolerant of corruption than we are in other countries, and not to be a, you know, that way. But I just would think that if he was waiting 3 days to get his cameras out, that someone would have told him, all you got to do is give him a bottle of vodka and a pack of Marlboros,
and you're
going to be good to go.
Like, would you have just, like you said, a bunch of cash just on standby, hidden somewhere, just in case this happens, you can take care of this. If it happens in America, it's frontline news. Police, bribery scandal. There, you could probably report it to police, and they just say, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, you should have paid.
I think if I was ever detained in a martial law communist country, I think that any time I took a trip to, say, Des Moines, I think I'd feel better about it, I think, after that. I think that any fear I had about traveling would be done.
Sure, sure.
I do want to lighten up the mode because it is, you know, it's start of summer, and with the start of summer means the end of the TV season. And, we like to talk about old TV, but there's some TV that's not near as old. I was looking up what the worst season finales were. It's not near as fun to talk about good ones. Let's talk about the bad ones.
Is this the subjective, that was a good end of a show, or like the people that just no one watched it?
I think it's it was a bad end to a good show.
Oh, sure. I bet I can guess number one.
I think I can too, but I'm going to go the list here. I'm not going to read all the descriptions because the 10th one is Battlestar Galactica, and no one watched that one.
What?
Besides you and me, maybe.
Thank you.
We're going to go past that one. Okay, Saint Elsewhere. For some, the series Ender is a brilliant masterstroke. For most, it tells fans their enjoyment of the series was a big waste of time. Nobody really believes show characters and places are real. The writers imitating the doctors of Saint Elgis were mere figments of an autistic boy's imagination. What it was in this episode, I saw it, is the St. Elsewhere Hospital is actually just a snow globe that a kid is shaking around. So
I suppose we should say spoilers.
Well, I don't think anyone is. This show is not even anywhere around, but St. Elsewhere number two. This is one also that I don't think anyone watched, Felicity, and we don't have to go into the description, but...
Felicity? Oh, yeah. Yep, okay, it's coming back.
Here's a better one. Gilligan's Island.
Three seasons,
98 episodes on the island. Producer Sherwood Schwartz had planned for a fourth season. The problem was they didn't get a fourth season. But they did have three TV movies because they got off the island and they went back to the island. And then they were – then the Harlem Globetrotters faced them off in a big basketball
game.
Well,
didn't they end up going to like a beach resort? And they stayed at a beach resort were like waiters or something.
Yeah, they created one.
Let's celebrate. Let's get back on the ship. What could go wrong this time?
The Howells bought a resort on that island. Okay. All right. Little House on the Prairie. Let's see. The plot was centered around a real-life issue. Producers had returned the land they built to the town of Walnut Grove back to its owners. So they had to give the land and the house back to the owners.
You know, I'd never watched it really, but I heard that show could get pretty darn dark. Real quick.
It's never one of my favorites. There's always some tragedy happen. I want to laugh. Okay, this is the one I think that you probably thought it was the worst one, but it's actually only the fourth one. Seinfeld.
Oh, yep, that was the one.
That's the one I thought too.
I have another guess for number one then.
Well, the next one is The Prisoner, aired February 4th, 1968.
One of my dad's favorite shows of all time.
Quantum Leap. It was supposed to be a cliffhanger season finale, but this odd canonic contribution where Leaper, Sam Beckett, instead of jumping into a stranger's life, falls into his own. There's another mission that has to do with his holographic traveling companion, Al. Anyway, the show never got renewed, so producers had to make do with what they had and ended this entire series with a dark screen and the words, Dr. Sam Beckett never returned home.
What? Serious? That's the end? Just done. It failed.
This is what also I agree with.
Is this number one?
We have two more.
Okay.
Roseanne.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Roseanne was steeped in the harsh realities of living a lower middle-class life, so she wins the lottery, and then it turns out that the whole last half of the series was just a book that she'd been writing.
Yeah, and everything was going down, like, didn't her husband die or something like that?
There's a whole bunch of things that happened. That episode didn't exist in my mind.
Can I take my guess for number one now? Twin Peaks.
Close.
Oh,
X-Files. And I didn't think
X-Files.
X-Files.
Really?
If your series relies on conspiracies and characters with names like Cigarette Smoking Man, the series finale requires some bit of revelations. The bright bulbs behind the scenes realized they could milk the concept. Let's see. That led to a draggy finale in which Agent Mulder was stuck in front of a military tribunal and few to no secrets were revealed. So apparently we see Mulder with guns. Loaded weapon. Seems to be this theme of our show today. That was, according to Fox News, the worst season finale of all time.
Huh, interesting.
Hey, next week we have the people from Toys, an exhibit at the Minnesota History Center. We'll have them live in studio on Flashback Twin Cities next week here at 1 o'clock.